Melanie said, accepting the pear and laying it next to her.
Sevens?
Go fish, Casey replied.
Nuts. I thought she had a seven.
Melanie reached into the card pile on the table in front of her.
Competitive much? Todd asked her.
Anyway, there was this big push to figure out our future, and now it has slowed down, or stopped.
That's fine, I just want to know what's what.
Nines? Casey asked.
Go fish.
Melanie turned to Todd.
Your brother found his son. He wants to take a break. I think we all deserve one. I can see how you don't need one. You've had your wife and children. Heck, you even had a dog this entire time. The rest of us want to take a breather, get to know each other, find out if we like each other, if we want to form this tribe your beautiful wife keeps talking about.
Sixes?
Melanie had a smile on her face. Casey looked at her angrily.
I just pulled it.
Melanie flipped the six of diamonds around to show the little girl.
If you want to do something productive, try to figure out a better water situation for us. Maybe the town water tower has a valve at the bottom and we could fill up things from it. There has to be a better way than filling rain barrels or melting snow.
Twos?
Go fish, Casey said happily. Todd walked into the kitchen. There was one more piece of strata, but he was full. He looked around for something to cover the food. He found plastic wrap. He poured half a cup of coffee and sat down at the table to think.
Water, he said to himself.
He grew up in Hanover. He visited his parents for years. As he thought, he realized he had never noticed a water tower.
I guess the best place to start is the town hall.
He was speaking to Hubba, curled up on his blanket next to the warm stove.
You up for a walk, buddy?
The dog did not move.
That dog is not going to talk back to you, and he's definitely not going on a walk with you,
Melanie called from the living room. Todd knew she was right, and was impressed with Melanie's hearing.
Well, I guess I'm on my own, Todd said to Hubba.
He drank his last bit of coffee, grabbed a bottle of water from the counter, and went in the other room to have an adventure. Melanie was playing a new game with Casey. Bridget and Wendy were still making bead jewelry. Meredith and Avery were sitting in chairs reading books.
Anyone want to walk downtown with me? I'm going to see if we have a water tower anywhere near us, or if there are other options for drinking water.
Avery lowered her book.
Sure, I'll go. Can we look at other stuff too?
She elbowed Meredith.
You want to come?
Meredith shook her head, not lowering her book.
I'm at a good par, and the fire is warm. I'll catch you later.
Looks like it's you and me,
Avery said to Todd. She got out of her chair and moved towards the coat rack.
I should be good in this, right?
She held up a ski parka.
That's all I'm wearing, plus a hat and gloves.
Todd grabbed his boots out of the boot bin and pulled them on.
We can check out some of the stores in town if you like. I just need to look at the town hall map to see if we have a water tower anywhere near us.
Avery was dressed and at the door. She wore a cute pink-knit winter cap with a pom-pom top.
Every town has a water tower. It has to be somewhere.
I hope, he replied.
We'll be back, he told Melanie.
I'll probably be here.
She did not look up from her cards, but put a hand in the air to wave. Avery was a tall girl, almost a woman. She was thin from months of starvation in New York. The 2 days of full meals brought color back into her sunken cheeks. She had long sandy brown hair that she let fall out of the pink cap. She had beautiful brown eyes and a wonderful smile. Todd did not know much about Avery other than her striking physical appearance and that she looked out for Meredith. As they turned right towards town, Todd asked her basic questions.
So, Avery, what's your story?
Do you mean what's my tragic rapture story or what's my life story?
She was more or less the same height as Todd, close to seeing eye to eye with him.
Whichever you want to tell me.
I can give you my story, or we can just walk into town and talk about whatever.
I grew up in New York City. My parents were normal people. I was the oldest of three kids, and we lived in a three-bedroom apartment. Rent-controlled on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, pretty far from the park, but a nice neighborhood. My dad was an IT guy for a big law firm, and my mom worked as a teacher at a tawny private school,
which is where I got to go. I am, or I guess I was, a tennis player. I was pretty good. Not playing on the tour good, yet, but ranked in the top 5 in New York State good. John and his kids play tennis. I don't think they're close to your level, but they play. There are courts here. I'm starting to miss it. I'm sure you had something in your life that was a grind. That's what tennis became for me. Pressure to play well for my team. Pressure to play well and get into a good college. It was a grind to practice all the time. Now that it's gone, I miss it. I miss playing for fun with some of my friends. She looked at Todd as they walked. I wasn't a very nice person. She paused for a moment as they continued towards town. I knew I wasn't nice, but when you're in a good high school and you're pretty and you're a tennis star and you have a senior boyfriend, well, you just sort of evolve into this self-centered bad person. I was mean and petty and self-important. High school. Good times, he told her. Yeah, well, it was fine for me. My parents gave so much, and my brother and sister were such sweet kids, and I was this self-centered bitch that steamrolled their lives. I'm a parent. That's not how we feel. No, I was horrible. I've changed. You don't sit at the bedside of your brother while he dies, then your sister, then your mother, and finally your father without becoming a bit introspective. I know what I was, and I know what I want to be. They were to the corner of town, walking in a well-worn path used by Rebecca or Greg hundreds of times. Someone had cleared the way with a snowblower. Small banks arose on both sides of the path. I think about why I survived. Avery's voice was flat. Was it some kind of punishment? A curse? Did some power make sure the selfish tennis bitch who took her family and friends for granted lived through their deaths? Did God keep me alive to make me realize how much I needed them? Is this a punishment for how I lived my short life? How I'd squandered my time with my family? That's pretty harsh thinking for a young woman. Todd tried to console her. I don't know you, Todd. I see that you have your wife and kids, and you didn't go through the alone time that most of us did. I was alone in my apartment building for weeks. I stayed at my neighbor's apartment because they fled the city to try and escape the disease. My family was dead right next door for 4 weeks, and all I had was time to think about how shitty a person I was, how crappy a sister I was, how ungrateful and disrespectful a daughter I was. She stopped talking. God, I don't even know you, but I'm rambling on about how horrible I was. And then I tell you that you don't understand because you're blessed with your family? I mean, all you asked me was, what's your story? And now you're probably like, I'll never ask Avery a question like that again. I like talking to you, Avery. It's why I asked. I don't know you, but I want to know you. We're probably going to be together for the rest of my life, helping each other, our children, our grandchildren, survive whatever world we can carve out for them. He looked at her when he spoke. You're right. I have a different perspective. I didn't lose my family or my brothers. I have people in my life that know me. I can't say I've experienced the gut-wrenching loss that you did. Hank, my oldest brother, who you probably just met for a moment, he can talk to you about loss and despair. I can talk to you about hope, about fighting for the next chapter in my life. I do not have the opportunity or the curse that you do. I did not suffer through weeks of solitude or months of desperation and starvation. But I can help you think about where you want to go and help you become who you want to be. They walked again, and Avery continued. Well, to recap, I was a bitch, and my family died, and I'm stuck in an apartment in New York with not so much food. The stores were all looted weeks before. No more deliveries were being made to Manhattan. I was up a creek without a paddle or even a boat. I cried a lot. I kept waiting to get sick, hoping I would get sick. I didn't want to live and fight to survive. I'm 17. I'm a princess. I'm not a badass who takes on the world and kills animals to eat. Shit, I was a vegetarian.
Todd laughed.
Yeah, that does deserve a laugh. I'm not a vegetarian anymore, I can tell you that much.
She laughed, too.
So I'm into my third week of loneliness. The power is off. I'm trying to ration my food, my water, and I'm in a really bad place. I'm bored, and one of the things my mother always told me, you're never bored if you have a good book. Totally a mom thing to say, right? Anyway, I find my neighbor's bookshelf, and they were Jewish, and I find Night, and I read it. Incredible, right? I'm sitting on a couch, and I finish this book, and I'm crying, and I realize I'm going through something similar. I mean, not the horror of being murdered, but losing everything. Losing my family, watching them die one by one as I'm helpless to do anything about it. I think, what the hell is wrong with me? I'm alive. I'm strong. Get the hell off the couch and do something.
Pretty big stuff for a 17-year-old princess.
You're not kidding. It was October and cool in New York. I put on jeans and a warm coat. I pack a backpack full of stuff I can use and I start walking. I don't even care where I'm walking, but I assume people might be near the park or the water. I'd heard rumors about the park and fighting and guns all before my dad died. I decided on the river. I walked west and south. And who do you think I run into?
Meredith?
Sal Torval?
No.
Yes. They stood in front of the town hall. Avery's story was so riveting, neither of them wanted it to stop. I run into this absolute creep. The one thing I will say about Sal, he was not a pervert. He never once acted or spoke sexually towards me. He wasn't a gentleman, but he wasn't a perv. There, I said something nice about him. Now the rest of his personality? I could tell he was high. I went to high school. I'd seen the stoners, the rich kids who took drugs. Sal was just floating along, and he didn't care about anything. He would smash windows and doors as if he liked it. She turned and looked at the town hall. Like this glass door. He would pick up a rock and throw it through. Is that what you and I are going to do? Maybe. But he wouldn't even try the door first. It might be open, but he didn't care. He would smash it. She walked over and pulled on the door. It was locked. But she noticed the bolt was barely catching the hole to lock the door. Avery tugged, and the door popped open. See? Sometimes you don't have to destroy things. Anyway, the problem with the rapture, as I'm sure you've realized, once you hook up with someone, you're stuck with them. I couldn't shake Sal. Well, I could have. He got high and passed out a lot. But really, I couldn't. How could I leave a person who was providing food and protection for me? It's like you said a few minutes ago. I'm stuck with this bum for the rest of my life. Avery held the door open for him. A second door was also glass, but did not have a lock. He pushed it open and let her into the building. How long was it just the two of you? A week.
An entire week, with just me and Sal. He's high almost all the time, but he's functional enough to get us food and shelter each day and night.
It's funny. He was breaking into places to find drugs, while I hunt for food, water, blankets, a bed. I might have been helping him more than he helped me that first week.
Anyway, I keep asking him, do you think we should settle somewhere? Have you heard about other people? But I don't ask too many times because, well, I'm afraid of the guy. The one thing I controlled was our direction. I kept moving west and south. We ran into Jamie a week later. She was a spitfire old woman. Heavy, smart, funny.
Heavy? Todd asked. He looked at a large aerial map of Hanover Township hanging on a wall in the lobby, scanning waterworks notations.
Yes, she was actually kind of fat. She was round and pissed off. She wasn't from New York. She got stuck there. Anyway, she meets us and says there's a group of survivors forming at a seminary in Chelsea. When Sal and I arrived, K Cameron, Wendy, and Bridget already made their trek. I'm sure you've heard highlights of that. Amazing. Ahmed was there. He acted very important, like he was trying to contact the mayor and the president directly to see what the next steps for our country were. I did not have the heart to tell him everyone was dead. He kept dialing numbers on his phone. Meredith was in a corner, sitting in the fetal position. She wouldn't talk. She barely ate. She was a mess. Todd made big red X's where he thought there might be water towers. None of the X's he drew were near town. What woke her up? Bernie pulled me aside and told me the girl's name was Meredith and asked if I would take her under my wing. Bernie was too busy with the three little ones. Kelly wasn't around to help out yet. Jamie was too old to break through the wall Meredith built. I was enlisted to help. She stopped and pointed to a spot on the map. There's one. Thanks. I was glad to have buffers between me and Sal. As I said, he never tried anything or looked at me funny. I think because he had a daughter my age. But I was still creeped out by the guy. I told Bernie I would do whatever she needed, and I went around the room and introduced myself. I started with the kids, then Ahmed, who gave me his resume, and then sat down next to Meredith. And? She was at a bad age. The little ones were too young to understand. Older people have seen or experienced death and can digest it. She was old enough to understand, but too young to digest. I was sort of the same way. But maybe I was just old enough anyway. You'll get to know her. She's a great kid. She was one of eight children, the fifth born. She lost everyone. Avery stopped and had to watch it happen. Her parents were Mormon, and her grandmother lived with them, too. Can you imagine? 11 people living in New York together. Anyway, they had a place in Queens, a house, and her father heard about Bernie. The pastor who didn't get sick was the blog article. He brought Meredith to the seminary on his deathbed. Their car was parked across the street from the seminary all winter. He went into an apartment building and died in the stairwell. I made it my mission to get her out of her cocoon. You did that and more. Todd looked at the map before turning to Avery. I didn't see anyone die, Todd confessed to her.
What do you mean?
You and everyone else. You talk about seeing someone die from the rapture and, well, I never did.
How is that possible?
You have to have seen people dead. They're everywhere, even here in Hanover. I've seen the bodies. I saw the grave in Central Park, the gunfight at the Metropolitan. I've seen death. But everyone talks about watching parents, children, and siblings die. Emily and I were in our house with Jay and Brian. We didn't lose anyone in the house. We lived our lives, shielded from it all. I don't know the despair you have experienced. I can guess what it's like, but I didn't have to deal with it myself.
You didn't lose anyone in your life?
I lost 3 in-laws, 4 nieces. I lost plenty. Friends, probably all of my extended family. But I didn't watch anyone die. You talk about being there, next to the bed when your parents passed. That's unreal to me. My brother Hank held all of his girls' hands as they died. I can't believe he's recovering from that. Everyone in the group has experienced a level of pain I can only imagine.
You know why Bernie snapped back in New York?
She took in all of the orphans and needy. She watched people die over and over again. The morgue truck was parked outside her building for the first months. She buried her own family, tended to dozens, hundreds, thousands of other people who died in beds around the seminary. Avery looked down and shook her head.
I think it blew a fuse in her brain for a while.
We're all excited about this second chance at life. We met about it after dinner that first night, talked about how incredible this opportunity is to meet up with other normal people. You've saved us, helped us find our way. Don't give us too much credit. We're just as lucky to find you. Plus, I brought you to a frozen town in New Hampshire.
Todd shook his head.
There's nothing near us.
I have an idea. I don't know if it will work, Avery said shyly.
What is it?
My best friend's mother was a realtor. She had detailed files on houses she listed, and I think her office kept those files. She was older, so when I say files, she had paper files. They weren't computer files.
Yes?
Well, maybe there's a solar house or greenhouse we could consider. When I was talking with Matt 2 days ago, he said he lived in a solar-powered house in Charleston. What if we could find one here in Hanover, or some other town close by? I'm sure there was some environmental crazy who had solar cells and well water. I read about all of the green options in high school. They were expensive, but rich, green-minded people didn't care. Todd looked at her.
Avery, you are brilliant.
What's even better? If it's a current listing, it might be empty. We won't find bodies.
I didn't think of that, she agreed.
This is why we have to think like a team. Everyone should voice their ideas. Don't hold back on me again.
He mock scolded her while making his way towards the door.
There's a real estate office right across the street.
Actually, there are two or three.
Todd stopped. Before we try our next idea, you said you wanted to check out some other stores. Do you want to do that first?
Well, I know there's a library, but can we find a bookstore? I want to pick up books for Meredith. I know Bernie is also struggling to find things for the kids to read or be read to.
And maybe get a few books for yourself? Todd smiled.
I admit I have selfish motives.
We walked right past a bookstore while we were talking. It's 3 stores back. Why don't we grab some books, use a basket or something to bring them with us, and we can cross the street to the real estate offices.
They walked back to the bookstore and picked out books for everyone on their list.
There's a library right down the road, and it has a fireplace. We'll start school down there this week. I know Emily wants to get Brian and Jay back in the groove of school a few days a week.
Meredith isn't going to like that idea, but it works for me.
Avery held 2 plastic shopping baskets.
I don't need to learn calculus, but I'd like to study solar energy, and maybe some house building and repair.
I know my nephew Matt has been studying farming for the last 5 months. He's in the same boat as you. Doesn't need to learn how to read and write. He needs practical skills. My sons need to learn how to read, write, and use math.
Todd held up his 2 baskets.
Let's take these with us. Leave them by the door at the real estate offices. My mother always told me, don't backtrack if you don't have to.
Avery followed Todd across the street to an office with house pictures taped to the windows. Todd tried the door. It was open. The bolt was broken, and the wooden frame was splintered.
If I had to guess, I would say someone tried this idea already, Todd said. The office is not ransacked, but the files have been searched.
Do you think this was our group? Avery asked, looking around at stacks of papers neatly placed around the file cabinets.
I do. They had the same idea as you, and went down this road already.
It was a great idea, Avery. Keep them coming.
He leaned over and picked up his basket of books.
Looks like our mission is going to be shorter and less successful than we thought.
We didn't find a water tower, and we didn't find an alternative source for water. He opened the door for Avery.
We did figure out one thing, though.
What? She asked as she walked past him.
We need to have a group meeting to set up daily chores, brainstorm about solutions to any problems we've found, and find out what has been tried already.
He followed her out the door, letting it shut behind him.
What was it like in Raleigh? The news reports were so strange, Avery asked.
Raleigh? He replied. It felt like he left the town a year ago.
How do you mean?
I don't know. The government was focused on your town for a few weeks before the nationwide outbreaks. You were all people talked about. After the first deaths and the mass exodus, no one had a way to get reports out of Raleigh. You were this black hole in the country. Reporters were not allowed in and did not want to risk getting the illness. You were a word and an arrow on a map. They ran footage of the traffic jams getting out of town over and over again.
I was too worried on finding food and staying under the radar from the guys in yellow hazmat suits to watch much television. I was lucky in more ways than one. Jay had the actual flu that week. He had a temperature, was flat on his back, so we didn't even try to leave town. We wouldn't have made it through the first checkpoint. I lived in a nice neighborhood. Everyone bugged out, more or less. Some of the people in my neighborhood died quickly, but most of the houses in my subdivision were empty after the first week. I had access to food that was left behind. There was no looting. Everything happened too fast, and people left so early. The black hole on the map was just that, a void of activity. Once the government pulled out to try and contain the disease, Emily and I were alone.
You had food, water, electricity?
We did, for the most part. The electricity went off in late September, but I had propane tanks to use on the grill. I had a generator to heat the house if I needed it. We had chickens and goats that we rounded up from farms. As I said, the level of despair and loss that you endured? Emily and I had our issues, but they did not compare to what everyone else in the country went through. They were on the corner of Wheelock and Main Street when they heard a person yell, "Uncle Todd!" Avery and Todd looked left and saw Craig waving to them with his left hand. His right held a chain creel with five large trout. A group of people walked behind the boy, Hank, Antonio, Ahmed, and Rebecca. "Hello!" Todd and Avery yelled and waved back. They held up their baskets full of books. "Need any help?"
"We have it,"
Antonio yelled back. "They want to carry the fish and take credit for our catches. No way." He smiled to the rest of the group. Avery and Todd crossed Main Street and waited for the fishing group at the corner. When Craig reached his uncle, he held the chain up to show him the big rainbows. Avery stepped back, not happy about fish dangling near her face.
They're nice.
"Did you not get to see fish on the Upper West Side, Avery?"
Antonio laughed.
"I'm starting to get used to the new ways, Tony. Give me some time. I milked a goat this morning. I may be grossed out by fish, but I milked a goat."
"You milked the goat this morning?" Todd asked her. "And you didn't brag about it until now?"
"I know, right? I mean, that's pretty cool."
"You're cool, Avery. You know it. I'm just messing with you. You should come out fishing with us tomorrow or the next time we go. Craig will clean your fish. You just need to catch them."
Antonio gave her a pat on the back.
"I'll clean your fish. I will," Craig agreed. "I don't mind."
He was overly excited. He loved to fish, and he had a new friend in Antonio. Rebecca was quietly pulling up the rear. Avery waited to walk with her.
"Rebecca, hi, I'm Avery."
"I know. We met last night."
There was an awkward silence between the two. Rebecca was not intimidated by Avery, but she was not used to being friends with a girl like her. Tall, pretty, most likely popular. Months after society's collapse, Rebecca found it difficult to deviate from social paradigms. Despite her old tendency to ignore pretty people like Avery, Rebecca understood when a person was making an effort.
"What books did you get?"
Rebecca reached out.
"I picked up some picture books for the little kids and some young adult junk for Meredith.
Todd and I went to see if we could find a water tower. We couldn't find one close to town."
"That's a smart idea. With only two and then four people, we used rain barrels. Once it got too cold and the water was freezing at night, we shoveled snow into them in the kitchen. It's a pain for not that much water."
"Yeah, well, we couldn't find a tower. Then we thought about looking for a solar house at a real estate office."
"We tried that.
We couldn't find anything outside of solar water heater, which didn't help." Rebecca was impressed. "You and Todd were smart to think of the real estate office so quickly."
"Todd thinks we should get our ideas and previous attempts down on paper or something, so that we can be more efficient as a team. Not that our time was wasted this morning, but maybe next time we try something that you and Greg didn't already attempt."
"I totally agree."
They fell behind the group, walking slowly as they talked.
"I like your hair and cap. It makes you look like a catalog model or something."
Rebecca was sure Avery modeled in New York.
"Thanks. I got this at Barney's during one of my many shopping trips this winter."
"Oh, my God," Rebecca said loudly.
I made Greg go shopping at the stores here like 50 times until the snow came and blocked us. You did that too?
Yeah.
I mean, what teenage girl isn't going to love shopping? It's awesome. Avery paused.
So where are you from? What grade were you in?
I'm from Concord. My parents owned a grocery store. I just finished high school. Well, I had another semester because I had to fulfill these stupid credits, but I was already accepted to a few colleges.
Wait, what? How old are you?
Avery stopped.
I just turned 13. I know. I sort of skipped some grades. I have book smarts.
That is so cool. I worked hard in school. It was tough for me, but I made sure I got good grades.
Wow.
Finished with high school already. So, where were you going to college?
I don't know. I hadn't decided.
Greg and I fantasized about where I was going, used it as a game to pass the time. On the worst winter days, we'd always default to Stanford.
You got into Stanford? I thought young kids who graduated early always ended up going to some mediocre school.
I don't know. I got into everywhere I applied. Maybe I was old enough so that they didn't think I was a freak or something. Rebecca remembered her interviews and her ability to sway the committees towards admitting her.
What grade were you in? Were you a senior?
I was, but never got to that magical senior year, Avery told her. I was a tennis player, pretty good for New York. I was riding that talent to get into a good college. I studied, too, but if I was going to Stanford, it was to play tennis, not because of my grades and test scores.
You know, I would not have spoken to a girl like you before the rapture, Rebecca admitted. I saw you last night, and you're pretty, and you were probably popular, and I was this 12-year-old brainy kid in high school. Our circles would not have intersected. I judged you, and I'm sorry. I wasn't a nice person a year ago, and I wouldn't have spoken to you either. You're right. I was the person you're talking about. I'm trying to be better.
You know Meredith?
She's 11. She's a great girl. You'll like her. She was only in sixth grade, though.
The rapture wasn't a blessing. It was a horrible thing. But I'm trying to take all the positives I can from the experience, Rebecca told her. I didn't have any friends before. I was always younger than my classmates, and while people were nice to me, I didn't have friends. I'd never spoken to a boy before, not one like Greg. He's the boy I met last fall.
Oh, I know who Greg is.
Avery winked at her. Rebecca blushed.
Yeah, well, I didn't have friends. I didn't talk to boys. I was happy. I did eighth grade volleyball. My parents pulled some strings to get me on an age-appropriate team, but I only saw those girls in the afternoons, and I was not really friends with them.
Rebecca paused. I guess I'm trying to say, I'm glad you stopped to talk to me. I'm glad I talked to you. I know we're going to be friends, and Meredith, too. I'm not happy the rapture happened, but I'm learning to be happy for the things that come from it. Does that make sense?
It's so cliché to say that you're making lemonade, especially when the lemons were the total death and destruction of the human race.
But yeah, I get it. You have to move on. I'm trying to do the same, to be a good person, to be kind to people. I was not a nice person 10 months ago, and maybe I still have my moments.
Avery stopped in front of the cottage. We may not become friends. I'm okay with that. But it won't be because I'm mean. If we aren't friends, it's because we don't click. Does that make sense?
Wait, you don't like me? Rebecca asked in a serious tone.
No, I mean, I didn't mean that. Avery was flustered, something she was not used to being.
I'm just kidding. I've been living with a sarcastic boy for 6 months. He's rubbing off on me.
Rebecca laughed.
Not funny.
Well, kind of funny. I'm never the butt of jokes.
Avery feigned anger, but thought, I just met my new best friend.
Let's go see what's for lunch. You can introduce me to Meredith beyond the, hello, I'm Rebecca.
Rebecca walked up the shoveled path. Melting snow ran down the concrete in small rivers.
You got it, Avery told her.
Rebecca expected the cottage to be packed with people, particularly because it was lunch. She found only Hank.
There's a cookout at the other house. Everyone's down there. Greg brought the meat grinder. They're grinding fresh moose burgers while the grill heats. Avery set her books down.
Sounds good to us, they said in unison.
Hank, having raised daughters, understood when two people clicked.
I can walk down with you.
He wore a light jacket, tan canvas on the outside, flannel lined on the inside. The weather was turning. Hank did not need the heavy coats he wore for the last 5 months.
Avery, isn't it? I met you last night for a second. You were with that other young girl, Mary? Is that your sister?
My name is Hank. Her name is Meredith, and she's not my sister. She's a friend, a fellow survivor from New York. Actually, she's from New Jersey.
Meredith? I was close with Mary.
Okay, thank you. I'm still trying to learn everyone's name. I'll get there.
Let's head down for some food.
He opened the back door for the two women and followed them out.
So what were you and my brother doing in town? Were you looking for books?
We were trying to find a better water source. We failed.
Water is tough. We struggled with it all winter. Not locating it, but keeping it in drinkable form, plus having water on hand for dishes and bathing. It's a mystery we'll have to solve. We live by a river and a pond, and it rains here. We have to learn how to harness our sources better.
We'll run out of chlorine at some point, too, Rebecca noted.
They used chlorine to purify the rain barrel water for drinking and washing dishes.
We'll figure it out.
They strolled at a leisurely pace.
You know, Avery, I spent 2 months here before you came, and I never stepped foot in the bookstore. We always went to the library, the college library. I guess I didn't do enough recreational reading. We've been busy reading statistics and things like that. My brain could use a break.
Your brother talked about starting school for the kids down at the town's library. He said there's a fireplace.
Avery liked Hank. He was a big, kind-hearted man.
It's a walk, but that's probably a good thing, too. Keep the muscles and the mind fit.
Yeah, that will work well for the time we need it. He turned and looked at the young woman.
How old are you, Avery? 17?
About to turn 18. Good guess.
I had four daughters. One was your age.
Hank looked at Rebecca.
You can go a little easier on the new guy. He doesn't understand what he's up against. I think he still believes he's a managing director.
I don't know what that means, Rebecca replied defensively.
Avery laughed.
He means Ahmed still believes he's a big shot, that somehow his former life is going to come back into play.
She looked at Hank.
Has Rebecca been mean to him?
He pressed me for details on my analysis. I gave them to him.
He keeps saying things that are wrong, and I correct him, Rebecca answered flatly.
I am not being mean. He's being mean, talking to me like I'm in fifth grade.
I know, I was just kidding.
It's been interesting to watch. Ahmed, is it? Hank asked Avery. He was probably a big-shot analyst, or managed analysts, and he's used to beating people up with his intelligence. He's taking it well. I can tell he's a good person. He opened up when we were fishing.
Yeah, he still thinks he's in charge of something.
Well, I haven't been mean, Rebecca repeated.
I know, I was just giving you some grief, sheesh.
Hank put his arm around the girl and gave her a half hug as they walked down the road.
Ahmed's a good person. He always ate last, always helped Bernie with the kids.
It took a while for him to realize no one was coming to help us, that there was no one to call. But after that, he settled down and worked really hard to keep us alive.
He's out of his league with our champ here, Hank beamed about Rebecca. Granite State represents.
Oh my God, you're such a dork, Rebecca told him. Represents? What are you talking about?
They pulled up to a gathering of people near the RV and large grill. The adults stood around the burning charcoal and wood. The RV generator was running. Hank assumed the kids were watching a movie or playing video games. Greg and Matt tossed a baseball in the yard.
"What's the word?" Hank asked as he approached the grill. "Burgers coming up soon?"
Kelly offered her assessment. "We moved the moose into the wood room and shoveled ice and snow onto the ground in there. It will keep the meat the right temperature for a long time."
She had blood on her clothes, signs that she helped move the large slabs of meat. It was like an episode of the Flintstones, moving those giant moose legs. But we got them moved, hacked off some meat, and Peter's cranking the grinder while Jamie forms patties. I bet they come up with some meat in a few minutes. Hank nodded. Okay, then. What's the talk at the grill? I want to have a meeting after lunch, Todd told him. We should get together to discuss needs and chores. Maybe set up a schedule or chart. There are animals to feed, traps to tend, fishing to be done. We need to figure out a water solution, set up a school for the kids, find more supplies, stock the firewood bins. Let's spend a few minutes, or even hours, coordinating. We have a lot of people and a lot of moving parts. Everyone okay with that? Hank asked around the grill. It's the smart thing to do, Ahmed replied. I totally agree. Bernie nodded. We need to get the kids back to school, but we also need to make sure someone is finding food and cooking for us. She took the conversation further. We need to make bread every day, bread or rolls or some kind of food that can be used for lunches. We can't expect to have a big cookout every lunch. We have water to find and boil or purify. At some point we will have to tend gardens, can fruits and vegetables. The list isn't endless, but if we don't get on top of it, well, we might end up like we did in New York, lost and very hungry. Hank was surprised. He expected tension from the new group, but they yearned for order and direction. He was all for setting up daily chores, not assignments, but a list of must get done for each day. It was their initial roadmap towards a society.
Okay, then. Sounds like a plan. Lunch and a meeting. Do we have a side dish?
Hank looked around. Solange is making pasta salad in the RV. Orzo mixed with veggies and lemon dressing, Melanie told him. She's watching the kids, too.
Is there anything for me to do other than stand here?
Hank, in constant motion for months, was uncomfortable just standing around.
Relax. It's your turn to stand at the grill, make some conversation. Meet everyone.
I'm Melanie. The doctor stuck out her hand. I don't think we've spoken more than a few words.
Are you a New Yorker? Hank asked.
He remembered her name was Melanie, and she looked after three of the kids.
No. I met up with a group in D.C., just outside the White House.
Melanie, I'm Hank. I am John and Todd's oldest brother. I rode over from Dayton, Ohio on a motorcycle last December. Spent 2 months at a bed and breakfast in Vermont, true story. Then arrived here on the snowmobiles parked by the cottage.
You were in a bed and breakfast? Melanie asked, shaking his hand.
It kind of makes your story seem less tough. If you say you rode motorcycles, then snowmobiles, and leave out the B&B part, you'll be cooler.
Rebecca snickered.
Well, I wasn't trying to sound too tough. You just met me, Hank admitted. I could tell you about how I lived in a burned-out house for a few months, avoiding government capture. That's pretty cool.
Why would you do that? Avery asked him.
Wait a second, I feel ganged up on.
Hank put up his hands to signal enough.
Really? Why were you in a burned-out house? Was that in Vermont?
Avery asked again.
Well, it seems kind of foolish now, since you all survived without moving into a hole. But, well, I was worried about the government grabbing me for experiments or something nefarious. I had a friend that was snatched. I didn't want it to happen to me. I hid in the ground for a few months. I waited for everyone to die.
Ahmed jumped into the conversation.
I had a coworker get nabbed. He went to the food handouts at the Metropolitan Museum. He got snatched for not being sick. A bunch of us were supposed to go on a raid and get him. But I was too scared. Everyone else had fevers, weren't eating. They were dead people walking. I had my wife at home to care for, and I wasn't sick. I believe you. Roundups were happening everywhere.
Don't encourage him, Todd said. Please just roll your eyes.
Bernie shook her head.
They came to the seminary after the blog post about me and how I wasn't getting sick. They told me they needed people to derive a cure, maybe a vaccine. They asked me to turn people over to them.
Oh, my God.
You didn't do it, did you?
Kelly covered her mouth.
Does it look like I helped them?
Bernie responded. I'd always shake my head when new people came into the seminary, lower my eyes to say fever or no appetite. They helped with supplies as long as I agreed to point them towards healthy people. The interesting thing? I was worried the officials would notice I'm med in the children, you know, staying healthy like me day after day. But the clipboard holders died so rapidly I would get a new official every visit. They never had a memory of who was already at the seminary.
Why didn't you tell me?
Ahmed was stunned by her admission. He was with Bernie before the blog post. He had a reporter friend write the article.
Because you would have called someone, Ahmed. You know you would have. You were driven by a need to accomplish, a need to speak to someone in power. If I told you they were rounding up people, you would have called and probably gotten yourself taken.
I accepted the risk alone. Ahmed lowered his face.
You're right. That's exactly what I would have done.
I can be a bit of a dumbass.
Ask Rebecca.
Ahmed was aware of his reputation. Like all of the survivors, he worked on fixing his faults.
I didn't say anything,
Rebecca replied. I know. Ahmed smiled at the girl.
I'm just saying you can back up my claim of being a dumbass, particularly when I question you about analytics.
Todd spoke. Solange and I went to the Metropolitan. We took some of the art, but had to walk through hell to get it. It was a battle or a massacre or something in between. Horrible. Be thankful you made the right decision. The door to the house opened, and Jamie walked out with a platter of raw moose burgers.
We ran the meat through the grinder 3 times. It's tough stuff, but we should have eatable burgers. Is the grill ready?
Yes, was cheered in response. Jamie placed 20 burgers on the grill. Peter was grinding another 10.
We have to try and make cheese, Matt noted, coming over from his game of catch.
I've made ricotta and mozzarella. It takes a lot of milk, Todd told him. I'm not sure it's worth it. I mean, it's worth it, but I'm not sure it's worth the amount of milk we'd have to use. The kids need that milk.
I need it for my coffee, Ahmed added.
Amen, Bernie agreed. There were no buns. Todd added the absence of buns to his list of comments for the meeting. If the group had a schedule, a plan each day, he would have made hamburger buns that morning. Solange emerged with her orzo salad and several cans of fruit cocktail. Plastic plates were distributed. There was silence as most of the people enjoyed their first fresh meat in over 6 months.
I forgot how great burgers are.
Avery broke the silence.
I was a vegan before the rapture. It's been like 4 years since I've had a real burger from the grill. Oh my God, is this delicious.
Hank suggested they make another round. Did we even put a dent in that meat? He asked Peter.
No, sir. This is 5 pounds off a 100-pound leg. There's a bone, but we used a tenth of the meat from just one of our 4 legs.
Let's cook more. I'll work the grinder. Hank followed Peter into the house and down to the basement. Jamie put the 10 uncooked burgers on the grill. The children were done eating, but the adults were not. As Peter and Hank returned from the house with another 20 burger patties, Paul, John, and Emily pulled down the road in a lime green Hummer. The enormous SUV stopped behind the RV.
Are you kidding me?
John jumped out.
You had a cookout without us?
He watched Hank slap 20 burgers on the grill. We went to a store to try and find supplies, and you party while we're gone?
Relax, these are for you. We've eaten. There's pasta salad and fruit salad right over there. The burgers should be done in a few minutes.
Hank waved off his brother.
How'd we do? Todd asked his wife as she gave him a quick hug and kiss.
Big score. Bags upon bags of flour sealed in a storage vault free of rodents. Boxes of cake, cookie, and bread mixes, too. We are set for a year.
She quickly pushed past him and grabbed a plate. Emily piled the pasta salad into one of the plastic compartments.
I miss fresh fruits so much, but this will work. She spooned some of the peaches and pears into a second compartment.
Hungry? Todd asked her.
We were surrounded by pictures of bread, cakes, and cookies. But there was nothing to eat. Yeah, I'm hungry. Hurry up with the burgers. Paul and John agreed with Emily and piled the remaining side items on their plates.
You know, Paul said through a mouthful of food, they had a huge commercial pizza oven. I know you have a home-sized one, but seeing the larger oven got me thinking. It makes sense to tackle larger baking projects from the oven at that wood-fired pizza restaurant downtown. They have a commercial-sized pizza oven. It would be a pain to walk down there all the time. But for big bakes, like a Monday when we cook loaves for the week, or if we decide to do a group pizza night, that oven is much larger. Todd pulled out his notepad from his back pocket and scribbled what Paul said.
What is that? Are you a detective or a waiter? Paul asked him through his mouthful of food.
If you're a waiter, put me down for another burger. These are fantastic, John told him.
We're having a meeting after lunch. I'm making notes.
John's tone changed.
What kind of meeting?
I suggested the meeting, but the rest of the group agrees we need one. We need to set chore schedules, plan meals, assign larger and long-term tasks. We need to hash out possible projects, discuss what Greg and Rebecca have already tried, what other people have tried when solving issues. We need to take stock of our supplies, food, and intelligence.
I agree, Paul voiced through his constantly full mouth. That's a great idea. We're not electing anyone or voting on anything. We're just brainstorming. I like it.
He forked the last bit of orzo into his mouth.
All right, let's do it. 5 minutes? Do we have a fire inside?
John looked at the chimney.
Looks like it.
What's the plan with the kids?
They can play in the house, sit in on the meeting, or watch TV in the RV. Anyone can participate.
Todd put the remaining burgers into a Ziploc bag.
Hubba is going to eat well tonight.
He scanned the lunch area. It was clean. He motioned towards the front door.
Let's move into the house and get started. I want to make sure we don't take all afternoon.
The afternoon sun shone into the windows on the south side of the house, warming the living room. A crackling fire brought the temperature up to a comfortable 60. People could remove their coats.
Todd placed legal pads of paper around the room with a few boxes of pens.
Craig wandered over to his father. Do I have to be here, or can I go play with J&J?
It's up to you. Matt, Greg, and I can handle it. Realize you will be placed on the food collection detail, or the fishing squad, as we'll call it.
I'm cool with that, Craig said, turning away from his father.
Really?
Because if it's raining, we still need to eat. If it's cold outside and you're tired, we still need to eat. If it's hot and the bugs are biting, and you only have 3 fish and you're tired of fishing, we still need to eat. This isn't just a fun fishing trip with Uncle Hank. It will be a job, a responsibility.
I know. Well, I didn't think of all of that, but I know. I'm good at fishing. It's the best way for me to help.
Okay, go play. John grabbed his son by the arm. Hey, can you be the adult out there? Keep things under control. Let us know if you need one of us to come out. He let go of Craig's arm.
You got it, Dad.
Craig grabbed his pullover from a pile of coats and ran towards the front door.
All right, let's start talking, Todd said. While Avery and I were downtown today, she came up with a fantastic idea. She said we should go to real estate offices and try to find a solar-powered house.
People turned and looked at Avery, who raised her hand and waved hi.
Yeah, it was smart thinking. So smart that Greg and Rebecca tried it already.
There was additional muttering in the room. I thought we could come together. I mean, we're not a large group, and share some ideas. We have chores or daily tasks that need to be handled. We need to milk the goats, collect the eggs, feed the animals, clean cages. We need to fish most days, check traps, set traps, collect water, purify water. We need to cook meals and clean up after meals. If we want bread, we need to make bread, even plan for bread. We need to collect and distribute firewood. We'll have to cut down trees and create firewood for next fall.
Are we writing this down? Peter asked, interrupting Todd. Some of us are older and can't remember things off the top of our heads.
Most of us, Hank joked.
We can write on this wall, Solange said,
taking a black marker in hand and writing down the tasks Todd mentioned, as well as ones she knew to be necessary. "Thanks," Todd said to her. Solange nodded back to him. "English is my second language. It makes sense for me to be the one to write the notes on the wall." Todd waited for the laughter to subside before he lowered his voice. "This isn't summer camp, or boarding school, or the army. I don't expect to have a duties chart." Todd heard snickers from his brothers. "Yeah, yeah, I said duties. Anyway, I don't think we need a formal plan, but we need to make sure this stuff happens. There are 18 of us in the room right now. Everyone can contribute. Even Cameron and Casey can collect eggs and feed the animals. I hope the first part of this meeting is used to formalize daily and weekly tasks. What I hope we can do as a second agenda item is brainstorm ways to do these chores more easily, and maybe consider projects that will make our lives better." "If we knock these out quickly," John began, "we need to discuss long-term plans." "Take a look at this list," Solange said loudly. The chores were listed on the white wall. "What do we want to do with this list? Are we going to choose what we each do best? Are we allowed to pick what we enjoy doing, like Craig did with fishing? Are we going to assign particular tasks to people based on skills, regardless of desire?" "I enjoy teaching the kids. I can formally accept that position if people don't mind," Emily volunteered. "I'm not versed in every topic, but I can read, write, and do arithmetic. People can float in and out to help me, but I can accept education responsibilities." "Done," Bernie said to her. "Yes, done. I can help when possible, but thank you," Melanie told her friend. "If it's okay with Tony, put us down for fishing. One of us will motivate each day to take a group." Hank looked towards Antonia with his chin up in a "that okay" pose. "Yeah, I can do that. I can help with boats, cars, and engines, too. I'm good with stuff like that, but I can fish, too." "Anyone want to accept the laundry?" Solange joked. "I can make sure it gets done, but I don't know if I can do it all." Jamie sat next to Peter. "I had a lot of kids and grandkids, and I usually air-dried my clothes, but I had a washing machine." "I think everyone will help," Solange told her. "Ahmed and I will cook, or make sure someone else volunteers. I know Greg is a fantastic cook, as are many others, but if it's okay with Ahmed, we will make sure a meal is prepared," Todd commented. "I assume I will keep my managing director title." Ahmed drew a laugh. "Matt and I will hunt and trap, right?" Greg nodded to his brother. "Water is too big a project for one person, but I'll try to set up a system," John announced. "We have water, and we have ways to collect it or get it. It's just a pain right now. I'll work on making it easier, and make sure we don't run out."
"I will do the same for firewood," Solange said. "I cannot carry all the wood, but I will make sure we find it when we need it."
"It makes sense that I will care for the animals. I'm a vet. I'll make sure the kids feed them and we milk them," Kelly said.
"I'll do that, too. I mean, if it's okay with you. I'd love to learn how to take care of them," Avery asked the young woman.
"Absolutely. I'd love the help, and to pass along knowledge. I paid a lot of money to learn how to care for a dozen chickens and goats." Another laugh came from the group. Items were checked off the list Solange had on the wall. Melanie stood.
"I'm going to move on to the next topic. As some of you know, I am, or I was, a surgeon. I'm a doctor, and I will continue to practice. I hope I can convince one of the younger people to work with me, learn some of the things we'll all need going forward. If Kelly thinks she paid a lot to care for chickens and goats, well, think how I feel right now." She paused. "I'm also an amateur botanist, and I'd like to talk about crops. If we stay here, even if it's just for the summer, we need to build a greenhouse and start our seedlings. We need to find some land that allows us to plant." She looked around the room. "If we aren't going to stay here, well, we can address the farming question when we get to our next home."
"Wait, you're a surgeon? Did we know this?"
Ahmed turned to Bernie and Kelly. "I didn't, Ahmed, but I don't know what most of these people did in their previous lives," Bernie replied.
I asked everyone to keep it quiet. Not to lie, but keep it quiet until we knew you better. Physicians are in short supply. I'm sorry if you feel deceived, Melanie told the three New York adults.